This is News West. News West is put together by the WA Amateur Radio News. News West is a community organisation with community news. If you want to submit something, please do so, newswest@vk6.net.
Hi, this is Chris, VK3QB, with news about a de-expedition to Norfolk Island. By the time you hear this news, a team of four operators and two guest operators will be on Norfolk Island as VK9NT. Chris, VK3QB, Luke, VK3HJ, Patrick, VK2PN, and Alan, VK6CQ, will be activating Norfolk Island from the 17th until the 31st of March 2023. We're joined by two guest operators, Tom, VK3FTOM, and Matt, Kilo Zero, Bravo, Bravo Charlie. We'll be operating on all bands from 160 metres through to 6 metres on CW, SSB and FT8. We don't have dedicated operating frequencies or schedules, so you're best to look for us the old-fashioned way, spin that dial, or check the DX clusters or reverse beacon network. We will also keep you up to date via our QRZ.com page. Look up VK9NT. As well as a Facebook presence, just search for VK9NT. And visit our QRZ.com page for links and news. QSL is via Charles M0OXO. Again, check our QRZ.com page for details. And if you're a contester, listen up. We'll be operating as Victor Juliet 9 November in the CQ Worldwide WPX SSB contest on the 25th and 26th of March. It will be the first time the Victor Juliet 9 prefix has been used, so that'll be a good one to add to the log. We hope to hear you and get you in the log, be it for an all-time new one, a new band slot, or simply a dupe and the opportunity for a chat. Pop up and say hello. And by the way, Tom, VK3FTOM, has the call sign VK9TOM, and he will be operating portable from various locations around the island, so listen out for him as well. We look forward to working you and getting you in the VK9NT log. 7-3 from Chris, VK3QB.
The West Australian Repeater Group meets on the first Monday of each month, or the second Monday if the first is a public holiday. Meetings are held at the First Pelican Point Sea Scout Group Hall, number 12, Australia 2 Drive in Crawley, down the end past the Yacht Club. Doors open at 1900 hours for a 1930 start. Tea and coffee are available and all are welcome. Meetings are also broadcast on Skype. Please see the website for the link, and please note that this link is only available to financial members of WARG. More details are available on the WARG website, warg.org.au.
This is News West, your amateur radio news on VK6 ARN, originating on the News West Linked Repeater Network and HF Relays.
Hi, I'm Steve Kennedy, VK6SJ, with this week's episode of Did You Know? Did you know that about the most devastating thing that can happen in your shack is generally related to either a direct or near-hit lightning strike? It actually happens more often than you might realise. In my day job, I probably assist to half a dozen hams a year, replacing almost every aspect of the shack, from antennas, coax, radios, amplifiers, SWR meters, tuners and power supplies. Most interesting thing, though, is that in 40 years of being in the radio industry, I think I could count on one hand the amount of lightning damage sites I've worked on in the commercial radio sector, even though I have way more commercial customers than amateurs. Commercial installations are often far in excess of 30 metres off the ground, compared to the average amateur installation at around 10 or 15 metres. You would expect that with a higher mast, a commercial installation will be hit more. But it doesn't seem to be the case. Why is this so? There are a number of views on lightning damage and how lightning strikes on radio installations occur. Most of them actually sound plausible, but since I'm the one with your ear and it's my microphone, I'm going to give you my thoughts. Firstly, let's talk about why a lightning strike occurs. We all know that lightning is caused by a build-up of electricity in the clouds, and once a potential exceeds an amount that's required to ionise the air, hence creating a path from Earth to the clouds, which is in effect the lightning strike. So lightning often occurs at a point that is above the ground because positive charges build up in objects on the ground until a potential between the negative charged clouds and the positively charged objects on the ground exceed the amount of potential required to ionise the air and allows an electrical path between the two. The trick to reducing the likelihood of a strike is to bring the potential of any objects above the ground back to the same potential as Earth, which is said to be at zero potential. How do we do that with a mast? Even if we ground the mast, there's still a potential for a build-up of charge on the structure, particularly if the mast is an old one with a build-up of rust between sections, etc. What is it that's done on a commercial installation that maybe isn't done so well on a typical ham mast? Let's talk about what's normal and a part of Australian standards. Earthing the mast. This isn't just a 3 metre copper rod hammered into the ground, but could be, depending on the quality of the ground. Once an earth system is established, it is tested for earth resistance. Typically, we would be looking for around 5 ohms between a peg hammered into the ground 10 metres or so away and the earth system. How much rod do we need to achieve that? As much as it takes is the answer on that one. Typically, this could be 3 by 6 metre stakes housed in a 50 millimetre diameter hole with an earthing compound used to bond the rod to the earth. If it's a guide structure, you would also place a single 6 metre rod at each guy point and bond it back to the mast base using a 40 millimetre copper strap, also buried and bonded to the ground using the same earthing compound used for the copper rods. To top this off, check the entire structure for rust, particularly at junctions between the sections of the mast. If these aren't clean, you'll have high resistance points that can isolate the mast from this great earthing system you've created. This takes the thickest earth cable you can afford, 72 millimetres is a good choice, and attaching it to the earthing system on the ground. Take it to the top of the mast and place it on a lightning finial that is above any other antenna on the structure. This bonds the top of the mast to something as close to humanly possible to ground potential, hence significantly reducing the likelihood of a strike. You can rent the earth resistance testers from any test equipment rental business. Next step is to bond your coax cable to ground also. If your feeder is like most and connected to a balun and then to a balanced antenna, then you have actually created a competing path for a lightning strike, and all your work on earthing the structure has protected you, has protected your structure, but not the radio equipment in the shack that's connected to your coax. How do you do that? Easiest way is to bond your cable to using earthing kits. This is typically used for Heliax coax runs and used to connect the bared shield of the coaxial cable to the mast, which is then earthed to your mast earth. Typically, you would bond the cable to the mast at the top of the mast where your antenna is and where the cable leaves the mast. If the mast is over 50 metres in height, you might also consider one halfway down the mast. That's great, but what if you can't afford Heliax? That stuff's expensive. You can get earthing kits for LL400, which is a popular choice of cable for hams. Check out your local ham shop. I haven't seen them for RG213, but given the physical specs for RG213 and LL400 are very similar, you could probably use the same LL400 earthing kits on 213. If you're using RG58, well, you're on your own and I can't help you. The next level of protection is to consider is actually quite common in many ham shacks, and that is the lightning protection device. This is best placed as the coax enters your shack. It must be bonded to the shack earth, which should also be bonded to the mast earth where practical. If you don't bond the lightning protector to your RF earth, you may as well not use one in the first place. As a byproduct of using the device, it's also a handy way to terminate your cable on the outside of the shack, with something more flexible on the other side inside the shack to your equipment. These lightning protection devices are available from Ted Emtron and their resellers and are very reasonably priced. Or you can buy a gas capsule equipped arrestor that can be reused after a strike by just replacing the capsule. The gas capsule arrestors are probably best for installations where you might be designing for that time when the ACMA finally allows us to use 2 kilowatts. Last step is to bond your equipment to the same RF ground used for the mast and feeder cable. If you can get away with a feeder gland plate coming into the shack, then this is generally a good point to collect all earth cables in the shack. So we do all this, we can reduce the likelihood of a strike to as low as practically possible. It also has another benefit, differences in potential between your radio and the antenna. Noise is created. Removing all these potential differences should also result in a lower noise floor on your receiver. For more handy advice, talk to your local ham shop, who should be able to supply most of what you need, plus good advice. Well, thanks for listening. This has been Steve Kennedy, VK6SJ, with another episode of Did You Know? If you'd like a text copy of this or other articles, they'll be posted on my blog page at dxradiosystems.com.au about 2 weeks after it's gone to air.
This is VK6ARN, and you're listening to News West.
This is Greg, VK6LH, and I'd like to invite you to take part in Tuesday evening's Slow Scan TV Net. It starts at 8 p.m. We liaise on 70 centimeters on VK6RAP, and we transmit SSTV simplex on 2 meters on 145.625. If you'd like to join us, just get your copy of MMSSTV or QSSTV. Join us on Tuesday night at 8 p.m.
Did you know that WAG operates a number of repeaters in the VK6 area, three of which are in the Perth metro area, VK6RAP, and VK6RLM are in Rolleystone, and VK6RTH at Tick Hill. WAG operates repeaters in the following areas: Rolleystone, Avon Valley, Katanning, Busselton, Brigadoon, Fremantle, Kellerberrin, Mount Saddleback, Mount William, and Tick Hill. All the details of repeaters can be found on the WAG website, warg.org.au, and click on Repeater Status. This site also shows repeater coverage and status and a link to report faults. This is Carsten, VK6PCB.
This is Greg, VK6LH, and I'd like to thank you for listening to this week's News West. We'll be back next week. If you'd like to contribute anything, please send it through to newswest@vk6.net.